You know, I always say when I talk about my kids and them growing up and their jobs and professions, I don't push them to do anything, right? I'm more focused and concerned about what kind of person they are, how they treat themselves, how they treat other people. I don't worry about all that other stuff. I know my kids are going to be successful, whatever they do, because they have the mindset to do so. So I don't need to tell them, oh, you should do that. Or we have conversations. They say, Dad, I don't know what to do. I said, don't worry. You figure it out. What do you enjoy right now? Is there something? And we have conversations about it, but I don't tell them. I let their wheels start spinning so they can choose the path, right? I don't want them to ever go down a path where they think that it's not their life.
Welcome to the show. I'm Joe Horton. On the Guild of Dad show, we unwrap weekly the incredible stories, skills, and expertise of the world's most captivating dads and experts, along with topics and stories that will captivate you and impact your life. If you're a regular listener to the podcast, then thanks for tuning in and listening to the conversations that we have on here. If you've only recently discovered the podcast, then welcome. We now have some 70 plus episodes in the bag for you to check out and listen to. This podcast is for you, the dads that listen. It's you gents that drive me to succeed with Guild of Dads and the conversations that I have on this podcast. Some of you have reached out to me to show your appreciation, which spurs me on even more in becoming the man and dad I want to be, expanding the reach of Guild of Dads. If you want to get involved with the conversation on social media, you can reach out to me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. I'm doing quite a bit on Twitter right now. Or also just drop me an email to joe@guildofdads.com. Tell me a bit about you, where you're from, and what challenges you right now to grow. You can also join our rapidly growing free Facebook group. Over in there, you'll also find a positive, encouraging community of other dads on life's journey, currently at over 2,500 courageous men from across the world. The Guild of Dads message is resonating, a message of personal growth and brotherhood, and celebrating men and dads, along with the far-reaching impact we can have on society. I'm proud to be on this journey with you guys and leading this dad-provement movement. Each week, we deliver content and conversations that will expand what you think is possible for yourself, enabling you to positively impact yourself, all areas of your life, and the lives of those that surround you. We do this by speaking to fascinating individuals, best-selling authors, entrepreneurs and ultra-athletes, professors, psychologists, also some ordinary dads like you, doing some extraordinary and impactful things. Every episode will give you either actionable resources to take away or a different perspective on a particular topic. These conversations are important and necessary because the world is changing. The role of dads and men is constantly under the spotlight, sometimes even under attack, and my dream is to make Guild of Dads the go-to resource for dads like you who want to make some changes in your life and live lives of vision, action, and meaning. So what's this episode about today? Parenting, and specifically being a peaceful father. What does that actually mean though? Surely none of us are at war with our children. But sometimes it feels like that. Armed with how we were brought up and a bit of knowledge elsewhere, we go into battle as parents. Threats, ultimatums, taking things away, and in extreme cases, raising our hands. But is this how we want our kids to grow up? Being able to be threatened, coerced, and for fear to be weaponized against them for compliance? That is what we unpack today on The Peaceful Way to Father Your Children. My guest today is mentor, parenting blogger, and coach, along with founder of Peaceful Fathers, Anthony Migliorino. With 20 years practical experience of peaceful parenting with his own children, Anthony helps other dads to apply peaceful parenting principles with their own children in order to help them fundamentally change their relationships with their children, and in the process develop emotional intelligence and personalities for their own to take into adulthood. And now to my conversation with Anthony. Anthony, welcome to the Guild of Dads podcast.
What's going on, Joe? Thanks for having me on here, man. I appreciate it.
I'm glad you've come on. I'm really glad you've come on. Now, the reason that you've come on to the podcast today is because we were in a conversation on another podcast. It's a YouTube series that you do with Zach Small, which is Oak and Rock Fatherhood. And I was talking about this notion of the shadow work that
men often do later on in life in order to actually look and examine what things have kind of formed in their life and what kind of scars, if you like, have formed from their kind of childhood that they're taking into adult life. And this is what Jung calls shadow work. And one of the things that I kind of hypothesized about was whether or not changing the way that we parent could actually begin to kind of reverse some of these things that we carry on into kind of into adult life with our own children. So actually kind of corrects, begin to look at kind of correcting some of the not mistakes, but the techniques that we use to parent and so that we can bring them up the next generation in an entirely different way. And I know you were kind of vibing with that. And I just wanted to ask you just kind of first off, how you kind of first got into this notion of peaceful parenting and being a peaceful father.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely agree with what you said, right? I think for me, peaceful parenting became something that I knew, right? I looked at the world and I saw how kids were being mistreated everywhere. Mm-hmm. Right. My childhood, I would have to say, was good. My parents, my father was solid. My mother was a stay-at-home mom. And I didn't receive any physical abuse, right? There's other things. It's not just physical. There's neglect and emotional abuse. But when I became a dad a month after I turned 20, and I knew that I wanted to raise my kids better than my parents raised me. And I think a lot of parents, a lot of fathers say that, but they don't do it, right? They have these ideas because what happens is we never really face that shadow. Right? We never do that deep work to get past our trauma, or it's so buried deep down that we're not even aware of it. And when it pops up later on in life, right, it could come from emotional outbursts. It could come in forms of depression, physical abuse, allowing people to abuse you. And we really can't pinpoint it, right? We don't understand why this is happening to us. So when I became a father, I noticed that a lot of other fathers weren't really taking the job seriously. So that's when I decided I need to be a man. I really need to step up and figure this out. And, you know, it's something my father pounded in my head, right? Be a man, be a man. But he really didn't dive deep into it, right? Provide, protect. That was the rules he set forth, which are great. But I think to be strong men, we need to keep expanding and growing. So, as my second child was born, my first daughter, my second daughter, then my son was born, that was 16 years ago. That's when I completely dove in, right? I was like, I need to raise my kids better. I need to create a legacy. I need to have a family where, like, in 20 years, I want my kids to enjoy my company. I want them to actually call me up and say, hey, dad, come over for dinner, be a part of our life. And when I looked at traditional parenting, most kids were getting hit, they're getting punished, they're getting yelled at, screamed at. And I don't mean occasionally, this is like everyday life for most people, especially in the United States, right? There's a big problem. Over 90% of parents hit their kids, spank, slap, hit. So, the more I looked into it, the more I got involved in peaceful parenting, I started to understand the principles, right? One key principle is the non-aggression principle. And that's we don't use aggression or force on other people. And that hit me, right? When I started to understand that, and I said, wait, we accept this principle with everybody else in life, right? I don't hit my wife. I don't let my boss hit me. I don't let my friends hit me, right? Or they're getting hit back, whatever agreement you have. But I started to see how the hypocrisy behind this, how so many people have these standards, but then when it came to kids, nobody gave a shit, right? We so easily would hit our kids if they misbehaved. We'd punish them, put them in timeouts. So I started to really understand that I did not want that in my house, right? I wanted my kids to experience their childhood and really enjoy it, and not just enjoy it, but use it as a tool to have a better life in the future. So, peaceful parenting, it's 26 years later. I'm sorry, 24 years later. And, my kids were sort of like a test run, right? It wasn't something a lot of people were doing. And the results, right, not just to be a proud dad, but the results are astounding. How my kids have turned out, how they communicate. There's no problems with addiction. They have a high emotional intelligence. They're assertive. They can stick up for themselves, and they can actually, you know, they're highly functioning adults now. So it's a good thing to see as as I get older.
Yeah, and it's interesting because before we came on tonight's conversation, I was kind of reflecting on my own parenting and what it was like growing up, and like for instance, in the UK, I think, you know, I was born in 1979, so I'm like 40, coming up to 43 now. And we were probably the last of the generation to actually be like hit and kind of smacked. You guys call it getting spanked over there. But we were kind of last of that generation. And it was, for our parents, it was kind of like the last resort. But we still got the kind of the threats and the things being taken away if we didn't do stuff. And I think that, speaking to other people of my generation, they're kind of like, well, they're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. Okay, they don't want to be like their parents' generation in terms of the methods they use. But then again, you've also got like a very, should we say, liberal way of allowing kids to do just what they want. And I often see this when I'm out and about with my wife and stuff, where we have this loose term. We call them free spirit kids, where, you know, they're the kids in the restaurant that are kind of like running around, terrorizing everyone in the restaurant when everyone else is sitting there quietly. And it's just like, you're kind of cringing and you're like, and the parent goes to them, oh, Johnny, please don't do that. Please don't do that. And he just like laughs in their face and just carries on doing it, sort of thing. And I think a lot of parents, I think, are in this kind of quandary of straddling these kind of two generations of actually, we don't want to be like our parents were, but also we don't want to go so far the other way that our kids just do exactly what they want. And I know that's kind of, speaking to other guys on peaceful parenting techniques, that's one of the kind of popular, there's one of the misconceptions that I think there is around what it means in terms of boundaries and consequences and stuff. But I think this is a challenge that you'll probably tell me what parents say to you when they first come to see you and say what sort of problems they're having and stuff, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, what you were saying right there, it's opposite sides of the same coin, right? Mm-hmm. So you have authoritative and then you have permissive. To me, they're both abusive, right? If you're authoritative and you're always demanding, punishing, hitting, yelling, that's abuse. If you're permissive, it means you're not giving your kids your attention, you're neglecting them, and you're allowing them to misbehave because you don't want to step up to the role, right? It has nothing to do about allowing your kids to be free. My kids are free, right? They're free to do whatever they want. They're free to interact with whoever they want. They're free to disagree with me, you know, and that's what I, you know, the principles that I build my family on. So I would tell parents, you know, a lot of it is fear-based, right? You think that we have to control, or if we don't, it's going to be chaotic. But I guarantee fathers and any parent, if you take the time to learn skills, right, no matter what it is, if it's parenting, finance, you know, bocce ball, whatever you're doing, if you learn those skills, you will get better. But you have to be dedicated and put in the work. And that's what happens with parenting. So many of us, we either parent the way we were parented or we go the complete opposite. Right, because we don't know. And you know, I say this all the time. We read books on finance, on working out, but we never read books on parenting. And it's something that if fathers started doing, you would see immediate impact on how children behave, on how we respond to them. So those kids who are in the diner running around, it's not the kids that are bad, it's the parents that are misbehaving, right? First of all, you probably shouldn't take your kid, if he's 2 years old, to a restaurant. It's not fair to him. He doesn't want to be there, right? Go to a more kid-friendly place. This way you're not disrupting everybody else. And then two, you know, when the second thing is when your kids are emotionally available, right? Once you laid down the path of cooperation, negotiation, you know, really good skills that we want to instill in our kids, then they can sit down, they can enjoy your time at a restaurant or anywhere you go, right? So a lot of the kids we see outside where parents say, you know, you need to be harder on those kids. You need to be more strict. You need to lay down the law, show them who's boss. That does nothing for the relationship, right? You might have your kid behave in that instant out of fear. They might be afraid, right? Because mom or dad is going to, you know, hit them or punish them or take things away from them. But what you're doing is you're instead of teaching them how to behave, you're conditioning them to submit. And I mean, we see this everywhere now in society, right? There's a rule, there's a law. It doesn't matter if it's moral, doesn't matter if it's just, everybody just obeys out of fear, right? Whether it's a mandate or, you know, really any law, you can take any law and put it on that. But yeah, it's a big misconception, right? It's, if you think about it like this, when we talk to our friends, other men, right, we want to build them up. We want to encourage them and motivate them. We want to be honest, and we want what's best for them. If we handed down those values to our kids, it would be greatly beneficial, right? If we could say, hey, this works in the real world, we need to treat our kids this way, right? We need to treat our kids better than our friends. We need to give them respect, courtesy. We need to be kind to them because they're young people who are growing and they're trying to adapt and learn about the world they're in. So we have to be patient, right? We have to be able to be committed to doing or going through difficult times with them and being the adult, right? Not being the ones who's lashing out and getting upset because our two-year-old won't put his shoes on or won't brush his teeth, right? That's when we have to have some mental fortitude. And we have to say, hey, how can I solve this problem without having it negatively impact my child's well-being, right? Their developing brain. You know, just to clear that up, right? Peaceful parenting it's not liberal parenting. It's not easy parenting, right? It's actually taking the more direct and hard route.
And in terms of like, we've obviously just mentioned about sort of like two-year-olds, and that one of the things that I kind of, an insight that we got was, so my oldest daughter, she's 12 now. I think she was 6 at the time when she was diagnosed. So she's on the autistic spectrum. So she has autism. And what we found with her, and we kind of had to learn the hard way with this, basically. So her behavior changed very, very quickly. And we were kind of thrown completely by surprise by it. And literally out of desperation, just to kind of underline what you're saying, we got a book called, I think it was by a guy called Jeffrey Bernstein, called 7 Days to a Less Defiant Child, because we were just pulling our hair out. We just didn't know what was going on. So we got this book, and a lot of what it was actually kind of completely changing the way we parented. And it was actually picking our battles, backing off rather than going in all guns blazing. And I'll never forget one day, you know, we used to have a little bit of a battle with her getting dressed for school and stuff. And one day we just, you know, walked into the bedroom, put her clothes on the bed, shut the bedroom door, walked away. And then about 3 minutes later, she just walks out of her bedroom dressed, you know. And that was kind of like that kind of blew me away in some respects. And it's one of the reasons why sometimes, occasionally, I'll tweet that backing off is one of the biggest superpowers a parent can have, because that was, for me, that was the first time that I'd properly backed off, and all of a sudden I'd got the response, you know, I'd got what needed to happen just by the simple act of backing off. So, and that was kind of what opened my eyes to actually, maybe we want to try a few different techniques in how we parent our kids, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, man. And I think that's very brave, right? It's a courageous thing to do. And a lot of men do not go that route. The ego gets in the way, right? They start to take things personally. Oh, my kid's not doing this because of me, right? Or they're trying to manipulate me, or they're trying to put up resistance against me. And this is how they see it. And, you know, with your example, with autism, which, when we see a child who we say, all right, they might have a learning disability, or they might not think like other kids, we consciously say, hey, we need to find better ways, right? We need to put in more time and we need to figure this out. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen with all kids, right? Mm-hmm. So when there's a red flag up, we put in the extra attention, which I think is awesome. The problem is with most kids, for some reason, adults hold their children to higher standards than even themselves. Mm. Right? There's so many parents who are overweight, who are unhealthy, and they're arguing with their kids about eating their vegetables, right? Or they're fighting with them about being on the computer too long, playing video games, and they're on their phone all day. So it's mind-numbing to me how we really do mistreat our kids, right? And you can see, you go out anywhere, you could see this. Go to any store, go to any mall, anywhere. You'll see parents constantly talking down to their kids, right? Constantly speaking in a demeaning manner, just putting them down, criticizing them, calling them stupid, lazy. And, you know, getting back to this, the shadow work, this is where kids start to learn who they are, right? They're building their personality, especially, you know, the first 5 years we know are the most important. So no wonder kids grow up into adulthood and they can't move out of their parents' house, right? You got these young men living in the basement till they're 30. No wonder nobody can get married, or they don't even know what a healthy relationship looks like. Or they, you know, they can't hold a job, or, you know, just basic things that we should know how to do as we grow into adulthood.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, this is nothing new. Right, this is just happening now. The parents have been complaining about kids for generations, right? For centuries. Kids are messed up. Kids these days, they're lazy. You know, when I was younger, I had it harder. I was, you know, I was a man. All that nonsense I see as a failure in fatherhood. Right. So I put a lot of the responsibility on dads. And my evidence for that, right? The reasoning is what we see now that's new is the fatherless home crisis that we have. Mm-hmm. We see so many houses, so many kids being raised more than ever without a father. And we're seeing how negatively it impacts their lives, right? Poverty, depression, even suicide. So to me, that's the evidence that if we want to combat this problem, yeah, we need to bring dads back in the home. But the standards and the level, the caliber of these men, they need to be a lot better than we were previous generations.
Mm, yeah. And I think that's right, because what you're we've our barometer, I think, is, like I say, our parents, and this is not kind of blaming or abdicating responsibility, but I think that most men and dads will say, well, it never did me any harm, or, you know, those are the typical things that come out of their mouths. And also they look at their kind of parents and they're like, well, yeah, that's the way they did it. So there's no way to, there's not any reason to think any otherwise and whatever. But to your point, I think it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So like, if you're saying to kids that, you know, they're fat or they're lazy or they're useless or whatever, to what we said at the outset of the conversation around shadow work, you know, that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So they go into their life thinking, well, actually, well, I was told that I was lazy and I was useless and I was all these things. So, and that I was never going to amount to anything. And, you know, that can really be carry, like we said when we spoke before, that can carry on into their 20s, 30s, 40s, even 50s, if they don't actually have the awareness and insight to actually think, well, where did that start from? Where did this belief system that I have about myself start? And often it does, and I think, you know, I was talking to my wife about this recently. I think it can actually be not even really obvious that a parent has implanted something into a child's brain about how their life is going to turn out. I think it can actually be very subtle. And we talk about, you know, I think people call them tiger parents. I think it's, you know, the Asian community, they want their sons and daughters to become doctors or lawyers or engineers, you know. And but I think that parents can be a lot more subtle. You don't actually need to say to your kid, oh, I think you should be a lawyer, or I think you should do this, or I think you should do that. It can be almost as, you know, me and my wife are talking about this. It can be as subtle as saying, oh, you'd make a good insert occupation here, you know. That's how subtle
it is. Yeah, kind of guide them to a specific spot, not force them.
Yeah, and I think that even the subtlest of suggestions, I think can brand like a cattle brand onto the mind of a child. You know, oh, you'd make a good policeman. So my mum and dad always said that I should be a policeman, or you know, and they didn't say that, but that's how a kid can interpret it that way. And I certainly found that with me. Like, you know, my dad would suggest stuff to me that I'd be good at, and funnily enough, my early career is exactly what he suggested to me I'd be good at, you know. And then and this feeds into this whole thing we were talking about before, which was the greatest burden for a child to bear is the unlived life of a parent. And this is the real subtle ways that parents can actually start to say stuff to kids about what they should be doing. And adults don't realize till further down the line that actually I'm not living my life, I'm living the life of someone else, you know, which causes problems. So, yeah, so that's what we're kind of trying to unravel here.
It causes a lot of pain, brother, a lot. Mm. You know, I always say when I talk about my kids and them growing up and their jobs and professions, I don't push them to do anything, right? I'm more focused and concerned about what kind of person they are, how they treat themselves, how they treat other people. I don't worry about all that other stuff. I know my kids are going to be successful, whatever they do, because they have the mindset to do so. So I don't need to tell them, oh, you should do that. Or we have conversations. They say, Dad, I don't know what to do. I said, don't worry, you figure it out. What do you enjoy right now? Is there something? And we have conversations about it, but I don't tell them. I let their wheels start spinning so they can choose the path, right? I don't want them to ever go down a path where they think that it's not their life, right? Somebody else guided them, even me or a government or even a religious faith, right? I want them to know that they went their path and they chose it. Good or bad, they have to own it. They can make changes. They can make shifts. But you have to live with that autonomy, right? With that independence. And to go back with the language and how we talk to our kids, I just wanted to tell a story of a father I worked with where he had that light bulb moment. We were talking about his son and he was saying, listen, man, I can't get my son to do his homework. He said, every night it's a fight. We struggle with it. And I'm trying to be a good dad and not take his phone away and his video games, but he's not listening. So I said, keep having the conversation. Right? Said, just, hey, Mikey, what could we do to get you to do your homework? What's going on? And he said one night, he said, you know what, Dad? I can't do this. I'm stupid. And he said, what do you mean, Mikey? You're not stupid. He goes, where would you ever get that from? And he goes, you tell me it all the time. So at that moment, he was like, brother, I never will call my son stupid again, along with the list of all the other stuff he used to say. But he, you know, without having that conversation, he never knew what his kid was going through. He just always thought the kid was being lazy. He didn't enjoy the homework, which might have been the case. But deep down, that little boy thought he was really stupid and he couldn't get that task done. So it was cool to see, right, that the light bulb go off. And this is a guy, he's a dude who's been to prison. He was a biker. He's a rough dude. He's a single father, actually. But to see that moment where he learned how powerful his words are as a father, right, how much of an influence and impact he has on how that kid sees himself, right? I wish I could have every father live that moment, right, to see how strong they really are.
Yeah, just being able to get below the surface a little bit and find out exactly what's going on underneath the surface. What sort of things do you find that when parents actually end up contacting you, what are the typical things that have brought stuff to the surface that they're trying to overcome with their kids? What are the kind of the battlegrounds and the stuff that's really causing them sleepless nights with their kids?
Yeah, well, you'd think it would be something outrageous, right, or outlandish, but it's typically always the same things day in and day out, right? There's probably 5 or 10 things that every parent, every father argues and fights with his kids about every day. And they'll do it continuously, right? That's the definition of insanity, doing the same things over and over.
Expecting a different result,
yeah. Yeah, we know this, right? We know this deep down. So, you know, I see a lot of waking up, right, getting ready for school, the eating breakfast, tying shoes, brushing teeth, going to bed, but, you know, bedtime. And it's not, you know, it's not a peaceful parenting isn't a playbook to get your kids to obey, right? It's not to make well-behaved kids. Fortunately, that's the end result. What it's made to do is connect with your children, right? Actually have them hear you, and you're listening to them and hearing them. So you guys can create a relationship, right? Not just this top-down power trip that we think, you know, going back to what you were saying before, parents think if they're not pushing down on their kids, they're going to be out of control. And that's just fear, right? We're afraid that if we're not there, or if we don't, you know, constantly stomp our kids down, they're not going to know what to do. They're going to be misbehaving. Of course they will, for those parents, because you never took the time to sit down and talk to your kid and say, hey, man, this is, you know, this is what I believe. These are my values. This is who I am. This is what's important to me. Kids are smart, man. They know, right? If you're a dad and you say, my goals, right? It's really important for me to take care of myself. And all they do is see you drinking beers and eating Twinkies on the couch every night. They know you're a liar. If you say, I really, you know, love my wife, and I love my friendships that I have, and I really want to treat those people well, and every time they're around you, you're talking shit behind your friend's back, they know you're not living, you know, with integrity. Mm-hmm. So it's, again, it goes back to the non-aggression principle, these first principles we live by. So many parents tell their kids, don't hit, right? I don't ever want you to hit your sister. And what do? They smack their kids when the, you know, let's say the son hits the daughter. So they're teaching them exactly what the behavior they don't want to see within their kids. Again, it's complete hypocrisy. And not only that, it doesn't work, right? And what do you teach your kid? You know, you're teaching them that you can control other people because you're bigger and stronger. Or when you don't get what you want, you can physically hurt people to make them comply. So yeah, it's completely, you know, it's completely obvious once you have the conversation. So many of us don't pay attention.
So it takes dad on a journey as well, because it means it puts the spotlight on dad to lead by example, and also mum to lead by example, because when dad starts leading by example, the natural byproduct of that is mum sees that dad's leading by example, so she begins to lead by example as well. So it becomes like this, actually, you're actually role modeling the behavior that you want to see in your kids. And I'm guessing that it probably with some couples, it may be a case that there's a few bumps in the road to get mum and dad both on the same wavelength in terms of what they're doing. I would guess, because sometimes some parents may be not up for the new way of doing things as the other one. So it's getting both parents on the same page as well.
Yeah. Well, I would say surprisingly, more moms hit their children than fathers, right? Statistically. Mm-hmm. And if you asked anybody, they would probably think it's the exact opposite, right? That dads are hitting the kids, which is not always the case, not even the majority of the time. A lot of that has to do with single mothers, single mother homes. I have a lot of stress, only one parent raising kids. So obviously there's going to be a lot of conflict and stress. I will say though, right, there's one thing that I always think about in regards to peaceful parenting and learning how to parent better, right? Improving ourselves. And, you know, I'm going to use spanking, hitting, right? Because it's the most obvious, right? It's the most obvious infringement on another person's rights as a human being. So when I talk to parents and they advocate for hitting their kids or spanking them, I tell them to think about it like this, right? If you chose to marry a woman, or if you're a woman and you chose to marry a man, and they physically are hitting you, right? We tell that woman to leave, or that man, get out of the relationship. It's abusive. And they have the choice to leave. So what I tell fathers is, if you're hitting your kid, that child depends on you for shelter, for food. They're dependent, right? They need you to survive. And you're physically hitting them, which they don't have the option of a spouse to leave, right? They need you to survive. So to me, that's something that you have to understand, right? You have to be aware of this. Mm. So that's why, even more so, why we shouldn't do it, right? We should treat our kids better than anybody else in the world.
Yeah.
Because they depend on us. They need us for survival. So we should never abuse that power over them, right? They can't leave. So, you know, that's something that some, I would say a lot of fathers, they start to understand that, right? They start to say, yeah, you know, this makes sense. Yeah. Another important thing, right? I had a business for over 2 decades. I ran my own business. And obviously speed bumps in the beginning, right? A lot of roadblocks, figuring things out. But I grew it to be very successful. And the way that I did that is I started to care more about my customers, if I was providing a good service, right? It wasn't always just about money, 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 give me your money. Once I did that, right, I gained trust and I gained more customers. The business flourished. So I tell the same thing with, you know, fathers, right? We need to treat our kids better than our customers. And that was a lesson that I learned, right? It was like a light bulb went off in my head. I said, I'm spending so much time emailing customers. How was the service? Did we do everything good? Right? Is there anything that we could have done better? And I care so much about what these people think. And then I was going home and I never asked my kids that, right? Hey, how great is your life? Is there anything that I can do better as a dad? How can I help you, right? Solve problems? Or is there anything you need me to do? Is there anything you're unhappy with? And, you know, I think if we do that as fathers, right? How great is that to let our kids know that we care so much about the job, the most important job we'll ever have in our lives, to get feedback from the people we're fathering, right? The kids we're fathering.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was a really cool concept that I had to, you know, figure out to be a better dad, take from the business world to parenting.
Yeah. And I think it's really helpful to have like analogies like that in terms of how your work life translates, because I think that you would get feedback. And funnily enough, I just came off of a Spaces, interestingly, this evening, and we were talking about this notion of actually, you know, doing a review on yourself, on your own performance. And one of the things that came out of that discussion this evening was around this notion of actually getting soliciting feedback from others about yourself as well. And it's a really hard and alien thing for, I think, most people to do, and particularly dads to do, but to actually get your kids to give you feedback as well, it's doubly hard, because it's not something we're used to doing, but it enables you to see the stuff that you would otherwise, I think, be blindsided by. And quite often they will tell you that you're doing actually quite a good job. And you're like, hang on a minute, are you sure? And they're like, yeah, you're doing pretty good, Dad. And you're just like, oh, okay. That's a relief.
Gents, I'm going to jump into the conversation here very quickly. You've probably heard me mention that putting out a regular podcast involves a substantial investment of both time and money to make it happen. Guild of Dads isn't sponsored, and I'm 100% self-funded. So I've recently set up a service called Ko-Fi, which means if you like and appreciate what I'm doing with the Guild of Dads podcast and Facebook group, or even if you want to follow me on social media, then you can buy me a coffee to say thanks and support my work. Just head on over to guildofdads.com and you'll see a small coffee cup at the bottom left-hand side of the screen entitled Donate. You can also follow me on there, so I'll be posting updates and some other cool stuff just to let you know what I'm up to. Any of you guys helping to support the podcast and group by donating will get a shout out on both platforms as my thanks to you for getting behind what I'm doing. If you ever wonder how some of my amazing guests get to where they are in life, the athletes, the entrepreneurs, those making a massive impact on the world, I can tell you that pretty much all of them follow a very deliberate plan or system of some kind. This is exactly what I do too, and I'm revealing how you can implement a plan and system in your own life completely free in my ebook, The Dad Blueprint, over at guildofdads.com/dad. Incidentally, many of the people I interview on this show will be leveraging the power of similar systems to radically level up their lives and transform into the men and dads they always wanted to be. So you'll be in amazing company. And now back to today's conversation.
Well, could you imagine if your parents ever asked you that? Like, if you can think back to your childhood and your dad ever sat you down and said, hey, Joe, how am I doing as a dad? Are you happy with how your childhood's going? Right? You would be in shock and awe.
I love it.
And yeah, I think, I know.
And I think the thing is, I think My dad would say that to me, but it would generally be if we were, had been fishing for a couple of hours, or if we'd been out on our bikes for a couple of hours. It would be, it would take a certain level of, I think, him being relaxed and chilled enough and us connecting enough to do that. And I think this is probably the issue as well for a lot of dads, is that it's getting into that, like, that zone of kind of connection often happens when you're kind of, when you're away from mum and dad, or if you're doing an activity or whatever, and you're kind of, you're in what that, what I would call that kind of bonding zone. And I think that it's kind of getting that bonding zone actually out of when you're going fishing or you're doing an activity together, and actually transplanting that bonding zone into the family home, you know, of an evening just after you've had dinner, or so that it's not just confined to those times when you're actually kind of kicking back and just chilling, you know, because I think it does happen when you're kind of chilling for some parents, but it has to get, it's sad that it has to get to that point before you actually, so what do you reckon, son, am I doing all right at the moment? Do you know what I mean? That's what often happens. So,
yeah, I would say that those moments probably saved my life as a kid, right? When I was 16, my father really stepped up and, you know, he got me out with him. He got me fishing with him, and he participated in sports that I was, and it wasn't really like that before. He spent a lot of time working, right? He was a workaholic. So I would say from that age, right, from 16, probably 17, there were a lot of bad things happening, and knowing that my dad was there really helped me a lot, right? It helped me knowing that I had another man who cared and was actually willing to talk to me and support me in that. But going back to what you were saying earlier about, you know, blaming our parents, right? I get that a lot. People say, well, you know, I don't want to blame my parents. I love my parents. And, you know, my answer to that is absolutely, right? We should love our parents. We should forgive them. But it's important to see where they went wrong so we don't repeat the same mistakes. So that's why I always point back to the parenting, right? How did your dad treat you? How did your mother treat you? Because so many people, you know, you talk again about the shadow. So many people stay in dysfunctional and abusive relationships because of that shadow, right? Because they're afraid to be who they are. They're afraid to stand up to their parents, right? And they still let their parents abuse them. Probably not physically, right, in adulthood, but they still let their mother manipulate them. They let their father control them. And they present to their parents this meek and weak person who is going to show the parents whatever they want, right? I call it the, Robert Glover calls it the nice guy.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Somebody who will be nice, will change who they are just so they can get acceptance from other people. And that's exactly, you know, from, if you come from an abusive childhood or abusive household, whether it's emotional or physical abuse, right? That is what's creating these nice guys. Mm-hmm. It's creating the codependency, right? Somebody who doesn't care enough about themselves to push back and say, hey, I'm important, right? They're just going to attach to anybody who shows them acceptance from what, you know, what they're projecting out onto that person. It's not real.
Yeah.
So it's very dangerous.
Yeah, and that's the kind of third string. That's the kind of third string to this, isn't it? So you've got the kind of the adult shadow, the forms in childhood, and then the attachment issue, and then the circle is formed almost, and then it just keeps going. I've kind of been delving a lot more into shadow work, and I'm trying to get Adam Lane Smith onto the podcast actually, because I know you know of him, and he talks a lot about
this. Yeah, absolutely.
And I've been listening to a lot of his stuff recently, and I'm like, kind of pennies dropping a little bit here, because I think as well, you don't necessarily have to have been through like trauma as in childhood. I think it can also be like I've realized in the last little while, this is going to go I'm having a psychotherapy session. Like I lost my mum at 18. So that was right on the cusp of sort of leaving childhood, going into early adulthood sort of thing. And so I'm having to, like, I'm 43 now, so I'm having to kind of look back at some of this stuff and unpackage some of it to see how it's beginning to kind of impact how I go about my life as a 43-year-old man. And that's not to say that I'm going to blame everything on my mum passing away. But the point is it has an impact on how you form relationships, how you relate to people, how you medicate emotion, thought, feelings and stuff. And it's taken me, 20 plus years to kind of get to this point of actually having some awareness around how things earlier on in your life impact how you show up now. And I know speaking to other guys, but I'm not the only one. I know there's people sort of think of trauma and abuse as being like, sexual abuse or someone being beaten to a pulp by their parents. But actually, there's a lot lower levels, there's bereavements or illness or something that seems very minor, but is stuck in a young person's mind and they've developed a kind of coping mechanism or something around it in order to survive what's happening to them. I'm digressing.
Yeah, well, it stops you from being who you truly are to a degree.
Yeah.
Right. How can you go out into the world and express who you are? If for one, if you're uncertain, but if two, if there's something blocking you, right, psychologically, if there's a trauma, if there's a door closed, or if there's something that you haven't healed with from your childhood, right? How are you going to go out and deal with that? And I think what you're talking about, Joe, is it's getting in the work, right? It's doing hard things to improve. And when you were talking through that, I was just thinking about how great that is for your legacy. What you're going to show your kids, right, your family, about how we have to constantly acquire self-knowledge and we have to keep doing this inner work so we can enjoy life, so we can be, free to express who we are, not let other people control us and not be burdened by that inner voice that's always saying you're not good enough, right? Which really makes us a victim to a degree, right? And going back to what I was saying about the gentleman I helped with his son being stupid, right? That's where all this stuff comes from, right? It's these constant things that we keep hearing or telling. I'm a 44-year-old man. I don't care what anybody says about me, right? But I had to work really hard to get there. And to even, I'll even go down to this, take it up another level. There's other elements to it, right? It's not just always about being weak. There was a barrier that I had to break for a long time, was putting up a wall, always showing that I was strong, that nothing could faze me. And a lot of times that got me in trouble. It hurt my relationships. It made me closed off to my wife, closed off to my kids. So, there's a lot of different elements to this, right? It just doesn't make the weak, submissive person. It makes the person who could be grandiose with a big ego, who's, a womanizer or a gambling addict, right? There's other ways that we try to escape that pain. It's not always depression and anxiety. So to be in this realm, to be around guys like you and Dad Twitter and working with Zach, it's really opened my eyes to see how this one commonality of fatherhood, of being a good man and being a good father, how it's opened up so many important conversations. It really has brought important topics to the table. And not only just always agreeing on things, there's so many disagreements I've had with people. And I'm like, hey, listen, let's talk, change my mind, or I'll change your mind, right? Have a good argument. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. And I think the thing is as well, is I think that when the more guys you speak to about this kind of stuff, you realize that actually fatherhood becomes like a microcosm of your own experience. So after you've had kids, you begin to reflect on your own life and what it means for you. And I think for a lot of guys, fatherhood coincides with kind of the midlife period of life. And so you're thinking about this stuff anywhere, and your awareness all comes together, and you're like, actually, no, maybe I want to kind of break the chain and do stuff differently to what was done before. So, and I think it's just I think it's kind of interesting in the conversations I have with our dads now, is how much more aware a lot of guys are about this stuff now. And I think some guys, it's really weird. You've got some guys that are very unaware of all of this, but then the guys that are becoming more aware of it, once they've kind of reached a level of awareness, they're like, actually, right, now I know what I've got to change. Now I know what things I need to correct and course correct. And I can see where my issues are. How can I get help in these different areas? And I think, kind of like what you say on peaceful parenting, I think it's that's one of the kind of facets that comes into play. So in terms of like the kind of misconceptions, like we kind of delved into a few of these earlier on in the conversation, Anthony, what are some of the kind of misconceptions that people often have around peaceful parenting? Are they kind of like some of the ones that I mentioned at the beginning, where they're like, it's kind of free spirit parenting? Is that the kind of most common thing people think?
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely. They, you know, some people think I'm a hippie, which I'm definitely trying to be more of, right? I'm trying to not worry so much about the crap that goes on in the world and just, you know, be a free spirit. But no, they do think they align it with like being weak or, you know, and obviously it's a misconception, right? It's not, like I said before, it's peaceful parenting is hard. If you're not willing to do work and improve yourself as a man to learn how, you know, to develop really good parenting skills like negotiation, cooperation, leadership, right? Go back to the abusive stuff, because you're not going to make it, right? It really needs a dedication and a commitment to pursuing excellence in parenting. And I think a lot of people get misled by the title, right? Peaceful parenting. Some people call it gentle parenting, or, you know, it really is something that's focused and centered in more of a motherly environment, right? Especially in social media. There's not a lot of guys who are talking about it. There's not a lot of fathers, and there's not a lot of masculine fathers who are pushing a pro-masculine viewpoint and a pro-father viewpoint and a pro, you know, parenting, peaceful parenting viewpoint. You don't see it often. And, you know, so I would say that there's a lot of people who push back on it. But if you really think about, right, what it means to be a good man, what it means to live with virtue, those are the guys that I connect with, right? The guys who really want to do good in the world, the guys who want to add value to the world, the guys who can think critically, right? I mean, if you take the, you know, the spectrum, there's people that complain and bitch about everything, right? There's people who doubt and they're pessimists. And then there's also, you know, the people who say, oh, you just got to think that it's going to work out and, you know, life will happen. Peaceful parenting is neither of those, right? It's put in the work. Let's build healthy families. Let's raise our kids to again, to think critically, right? It's we want to train them, or we want them to not what to think, but how to think. Mm-hmm. Right? We want our kids to question moral authority. We want them to learn and understand what a healthy, intimate relationship is, right? What that feels like, how important that is to build a family around. And, you know, these are things that it's not spoken about, you know, amongst fathers or men, right? Unfortunately, mm-hmm. we waste too much time talking about sports, talking about, you know, crap, whatever they talk about.
So it sounds like you're kind of growing their own personality rather than actually stifling their personality. So you're kind of, to use the analogy, I think we used this analogy before in a conversation, but Mr. Miyagi's little trees, they're kind of watering and tending to them and just kind of allowing them to find their own kind of way, rather than actually using kind of authoritarian techniques to actually say, you must do this and you must do that. And if you don't do this, this is going to happen. And being kind of quite dictatorial. It's actually being, it's almost like servant leadership, I guess, where you're actually kind of, right, what do you need in order to be your best? And I'm going to support you 100% in getting to that point. And I think this is where family leadership has become a kind of dirty word in some respects, because I think it clashes with kind of feminist ideas and it clashes with this idea of this tyrannical leader. But in actual fact, a lot of to be a good leader now is actually giving your team everything they need to succeed at the highest level they can possibly do. And I think this, again, what you said about your customers and your clients and your business, it's a similar kind of mindset that actually you're giving people everything they need to be successful, and you're giving your children everything they need to be successful, rather than beating them down all the time and telling them how useless they are.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, I learned that in business a long time ago, to stop pointing out what everybody's doing wrong and focus on what they're doing right. And man, how production, environment, attitude, how everything changed. And imagine if we did that with our kids. Mm. Imagine instead of poking and prodding and pointing every little thing they did wrong, right? Oh, you know, your room's a mess. You didn't wash the dish off enough before you put it in the dishwasher. You know, you didn't, let me see your teeth. You didn't brush them clean enough, right? We're always nitpicking. And if parents were to focus more on what the kids are doing well, right, in a realistic way, right? Not participation trophies.
Yeah.
But in a real way. Oh, God.
It's gone off. Yeah, postman's at the door.
They were getting anxious. It's been a while.
This is what happens in live podcast, folks. Don't worry.
Can you? I can still hear you coming in clear. I wanted to add, you know, when I know you asked me if there's other misconceptions or things that people don't understand about peaceful parenting, and I think one of the biggest is I hear a lot is I was spanked and I turned out fine, right? So they say that I was physically hit by my parents, and it didn't have any effect on me. I turned out fine. And I wanted just to make this clear, what a lot of people don't understand about abuse, right, is when you're a child, you don't have the voice to speak up, right? You can't say, Dad, stop hitting me. I mean, you can, but he's not going to. So what happens is we normalize that abuse, right? And even more so is we say, I must have been a bad kid, right? There's something wrong with me because Dad's hitting me. Dad loves me. Right. And if mom and dad love me, why would they hit me? It can't be because they're bad. It's because I'm bad. Right. I misbehaved. I spoke back. I didn't clean my room. So, again, this is part of that shadow, the false self that what we're creating in these kids. We grow up. How are we going to have real relationships with people? Right. There's always this thing in the back of our mind. Right. I'm bad. I'm not good enough. So just to build on that. Right. That's another example of how abuse continues, right? Because we allow it. Mm. We don't, you know, I'm constantly speaking out against parents hitting their kids, right? Don't do it. It's not worth it. There's not one study in all of humanity from anybody, right? Therapists, psychologists, scientists, teachers, whoever, virologists, everybody says, don't hit your kids. There's no studies that say it's good for them, right? Every study shows there's negative aspects to it. Decrease in cognitive ability, increase in aggression, criminality, increase in teen pregnancy. There's like no reason to do it if you can just sit back and take a moment to examine how you're raising your kids. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, I think, do you know what? It's interesting what you said about statistics in the States, because I think, I don't know, because I've not got the facts and figures to hand in terms of the sort of the difference of kind of social classes in the UK and maybe across Europe. But what I can say is I think probably since I grew up, probably I would say from the early 90s onward, I would say that kind of hitting your kids has been very frowned upon, particularly in public. You know, we would get it where our parents would like pull our trousers down in public and smack our ass in public. But like, certainly, I think in the last probably 30 odd years, I would say it's not so much that over here and across Europe. I would say there's probably small subsets of society where it still goes on, but I don't think it's as prevalent as it used to be. But I still think there is the psychological aspect of it. So it's, if you don't do this, we're going to take away this from you. Or if you don't do this, you're going to lose this. So it's still, there's still a lot of carrot and stick that goes on, I think, which is just as damaging, I think, to children in terms of, you know, how they take that into sort of further life. So it's interesting culturally how the States is probably different to Europe. But again, you just You don't know, because the thing is people are not going to sort of come out in public and go, yeah, by the way, I just smacked my son around the head because he was being lippy, you know. They're just not going to say that. So actually getting an accurate idea, and again, very few kids are going to report their parents for hitting them, you know. So no one really knows is the answer, how prevalent it is. But I think culturally, I think it seems to be not as bad, I would say, so.
Yeah, no, Joe, those are excellent points, right? I think there's a reason why, and parents know this, right? They don't usually hit their kids in public because we know it's frowned upon, right? We know we shouldn't be doing it. And it's, you know, there is an element of psychological conditioning to this, right? If we say as parents, we want to raise our kids to be assertive, to be independent, to go out and pursue freedom, right? To go live a life with freedom and liberty and really, you know, have the pursuit of happiness. We can't continually manipulate, control them, and use coercion to make them change who they are for our benefit. Because we teach them that you're going to go out into the world and there's going to be people who have more power than you, more money than you, more status, and they're going to control you. And that's okay, right? Because we did it as kids. We did it when you were a kid. We manipulated you. And we didn't do it based on any really good reason. We just did it because it was convenient. It was easy, right? We didn't want to put in the work. So instead of sitting down and saying, hey, what's going on? Right? Why are you crying? Or why did you throw the TV remote at dad? We say, go to your room, no TV, no ice cream, right? You're being punished. So we train our kids to allow people to control them. And I don't punish my kids. Right? I don't punish my kids.
When you put it that way as well, you're punishing the emotion, aren't you, as well? So basically, if you're actually delving into why they're behaving the way they're doing, then there's a possibility that they can actually say, well, it's because I was angry. Okay, well, why are you angry? Because of this, this, and this. Do you think you need to be angry? So you can delve into it a little bit more. So you're kind of, you're beginning to make the distinction between the behavior and the emotion, which seems to be, to me, to be a much more sensible way of dealing with it.
Yeah, and not only that, right? If your kid's angry, allow them to be angry, right? Allow them to express emotions freely. Once they're done being, and I'm not saying, you know, allow them to throw steak knives at you or, you know, beat their sister up, intervene, right? I'm all for self-defense. If somebody's in harm, help them. You know, the non-aggression principle is just you not aggressing against others. But no, if your kid is sad, right, don't always try to cut the emotion off. Let them experience it, right? This way, that's how they build up resilience to dealing with anger and sadness in the future. If we're always cutting them off, right? If I'm a dad and I see my kid sad and I'm like, stop it, stop crying, right? Because it bothers me, he's going to learn to shut his emotions off because it bothers other people. If he gets angry and I say, I don't like when you're angry, right? You know, stop being angry. It's mean. And again, we're planting these seeds to make them numb to what real emotion is, what really living is about, right? Living's, you have to have love and hate, right? You have to have anger and happiness. It's how it works. A lot of times we want to shut off the emotions because it affects us negatively. And it affects us negatively because when we were kids, we weren't allowed to have those emotions. Yeah. We weren't able to feel them fully. So what happens when our kids have them? It strikes a nerve in us.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I've had a discussion with a guy called Josh Connolly a few episodes back, and we delved into this notion of actually having kids and being able to feel the full force of emotion. Your emotions when you're with your kids, as well as their emotions when they're with you. But there was an interesting question in my Facebook group today around this notion of staying positive, and it was I think one of the guys was asking how do I stay positive because I struggle to stay positive all the time, and my response was there is so much pressure on people to be positive and happy all the time now that we should be you know, singing Zippity Doo-Dah out of our arseholes all the time. And I said to myself, that's just not normal human existence. And unfortunately, our generation have been told, and this is again probably going back to what you just said, we've been told that we need to be happy all the time. And the problem is that's not realistic, because being part of a human being, and it's only taken me 43 years to work this one out, it's been able to understand the full force of human emotions. So some days you're going to be happy, some days you're going to be sad, some days you're going to have a couple of days where you just really don't want to get out of bed. And I think that the problem is we've got ourselves into this mindset that we must be feeling good all the time about everything, and it means that when stuff's not going to plan, and we were talking about resilience earlier on, middle-aged men are losing their shit because when something doesn't go to plan, they're like, shit, no, this has never happened like this. And we're getting mental illness, we're getting difficulties, because the guys have just not been equipped to actually say, it's okay for me to be sad for a day. It's okay for me to be frustrated. It's be okay. And I'm going to have an early night, have a good night's sleep, and I'm going to get up the next day and we're going to start again, sort of thing. But I just don't think we've had to say, you know, we've spoken in this conversation about, oh, it never did me any harm. But clearly something has, otherwise we wouldn't have all of these guys in their 30s and 40s losing their shit over stuff that is actually not really, in terms of challenges that we're going to face in life, you know, getting a puncture in our car is nowhere near on par with, I don't know, a family in Yemen having their house mortar bombed by the Saudis. You know, it's just, but I think that we lose, I think in the West, we're losing perspective on not only our emotions, but also the stuff that we're worrying about as well. It's just nothing. Like, look in your local Facebook. If anyone's listening to this and you've got a local Facebook group for your town, just look at the comments on the local Facebook group. They're so benign and trivial, and you're like, really, have you people got nothing better to worry about than the shit that you're posting on here? And this is like in every town across the Western world, people are worrying about stuff that's just like trivial, you know? I'm having a bit of a rant here, by the way, Anthony.
No, it's good. It's true, you know? There's a book that I read a few years back by Deborah Ford. It's called Dark Side of the Light Chaser. Mm-hmm. And it hit me when you were talking about how everybody has to be positive. And she talks a lot about the dark side, right? And we try to suppress it. We try to push it down. We try to hide it. Even though it's a part of us, right? We can never escape it because it's always going to come back. And she explains how we need to accept it, right? We need to use it to our advantage. Right. If you have evil thoughts running through your mind, right, channel them to something that will benefit you. If you're depressed, right, understand, okay, I'm depressed now, right? There's something wrong with me. That's fine. It's going to go away, right? You're going to get better, right? It doesn't define who you are. It is a part of you, but it doesn't define who you are, and it shouldn't be stopping you from you know, where you have to go. So, you know, it's something I teach my kids all the time. But I'm always telling them, right? You know, Dad, I'm down. I don't know what to do. I feel lost. It's okay. It's normal. It's a part of you, right? It's there for a reason. It's there to tell you that something's wrong, and you need to look elsewhere to move forward. And I try to explain to them also. I said, you know how many kids or young adults go through life, and they're constantly in pain, and they don't know it, right? They can't even acknowledge it. They're completely unaware. And they keep living lives that are unfulfilled. They keep falling prey to addiction and to unhealthy relationships. I said, so be grateful that you can feel the suck, right? That you're human, you're aware of it, because that's why it's there. It's kind of like what, you know, people describe pain. You listen to David Goggins, that's all he talks about, right? The pain's there. It's there for a reason. You got to push through it. It's the same kind of concept, which is more from like a psychological aspect. It's training your mind, you know, going from like a fixed mindset to a growth mindset. I'm sure you heard that term before.
Yeah, Carol Dweck, right?
And just yeah, absolutely. Just not being stuck, thinking that reality is there, right? That's all there is, right? I was born and I'm never going to be anything because I'm, you know, whatever. I didn't pass high school, but that's not who you are, right? The possibilities are infinite if you just start taking the steps to improve and get better, right? That's all it is.
Yeah.
So,
One thing that I've learned as well is like when you start doing stuff that's difficult, or when you start making changes in your life, it brings all this shit to the surface because you're just not used to doing kind of difficult stuff. And that's why we all try and say we, collectively speaking, I think that's why it's human nature for us to back away from doing difficult things because change, it sends a ripple effect through our lives as to the what we thought was safe and, you know, and then you make mistakes and then you learn from the mistakes. And so it's such a big discussion point, definitely. Anthony, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you today. And yes, I've got a massive amount out of the conversation. What is the best place for people to find out about you, to reach out to you? If anything resonated about this conversation today, how can people get in touch with you, man?
Yeah, no, Joe, absolutely. Thank you again for having me on. Great discussion. And you can find me at Peaceful Fathers on all social media, Instagram and Twitter. Peacefulfathers.com is my main website. It's where I offer coaching. And occasionally I write a blog post or two. And the new project is Oak and Rock Fatherhood, me and Zach Small. We're building a community. We're trying to bring a positive and peaceful vibe to the fatherhood community. And so far it's been a cool experience. Working with him, he's a savage. He's pushing me to new levels. So
I bet.
I've really enjoyed it.
Excellent. Now I'm going to ask you one last question that I don't prime any guests for on this podcast, but I always finish the podcast with it. What is it, Anthony, in life that gives you meaning?
What gives me meaning? I would definitely say a willingness to improve, right? To constantly change, to constantly test myself and do things that are uncomfortable in the moment. And, what I think about a lot, honestly, is wasted time. If that makes sense, right? So I think about this often, that there will be a day that I'm going to be old and I'm going to be probably on my deathbed. And, you know, I want to be in the moment now. I want to be able to live and experience life to the fullest, right? I don't want to hold anything back because that time is not going to be here forever. You know what I'm saying? So I want to make sure that if there's something I need to say now, I say it. If I hurt somebody's feelings, maybe I'll apologize. But I want to try to be authentic and truthful because I want my kids to not waste that time. Right, I want them to live in that moment also. There's a couple answers.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I ask that question at the end of every podcast, and every single answer is generally different.
I know. I knew it was coming.
I'm going to have to. You knew. You've been doing your research, you see. You've been listening.
As soon as you said it, I zoned out.
Anthony, it's been a pleasure. I'm going to send you on your merry way. I appreciate you coming on tonight and speaking to me. It's been a real blast and there's been a ton of insights, and hopefully it's given a lot of the guys that are listening some food for thought in terms of how they go about parenting going forward. There's certainly a lot of things to unpackage and really kind of think about. So I appreciate you, man. I appreciate the work that you and the other guys are doing and these conversations that we're having. So thank you very much, sir. Thank you to Anthony Migliorino for joining me today. As he mentioned, you can check him out over at peacefulfathers.com. He's also on Twitter. His handle is @peacefulfathers. His YouTube channel, Oak and Rock Fatherhood, you can also check out, which he hosts with previous podcast guest, Zach Small. There was a lot to unpackage today, not least some of the preconceptions around permissive parenting, which in my view give peaceful parenting a bad reputation amongst parents who have gotten used to parenting in a more authoritative way. But a lot of what Anthony said really does make you think, particularly the boy who thought he was stupid, and the realisation that as children, there is no escape from the family home.
whatever the circumstances. Particularly with the way the world is right now, do we want compliant little robots or adults who will question and think about what they're being told with a critical ear and a well-developed mind? What do you reckon? Can you think of times where ultimatums have simply not worked? What do you think your children think of you when you pull rank and simply start issuing threats? Is there a better way to do this? If you want to link up with me, you can do so on Twitter or Facebook using the handle @GuildofDads. Let me know what resonated with you about this episode. Did I mention that you can now buy me a coffee on my website, guildofdads.com? It's really easy and helps keep the lights on here at Guild of Dads Towers. Just head on over to guildofdads.com, click on the coffee cup button and go for it. Those of you who donate get a shout out on here and in the Facebook group. Now, in order to have a positive impact on the world, we improve ourselves and inspire others. Share this podcast with others so that they may benefit from anything you have found useful or interesting. If you can make a point of sharing Guild of Dads with friends and relatives, it means that it can grow, expand, and help many more men just like you. The other thing you can do is leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, which really helps other dads to find the podcast. Right now, the Guild of Dads Facebook group is growing fast, very fast in fact. If you want to get on board, head on over there and join up today, where you can get around a lively group of other guys talking everything about being a dad and improving themselves as men and dads. Hopefully you find something insightful in every episode, so share with dads you know. In the meantime, live a life of vision, action, and meaning, apply what you hear, and we'll see you next time.